Good morning. Be seated, please.
Watch your voice crack now.
We're changing our calendars. 99-21-74, 99-22-96. Leonard Bailey versus Republic Engineer Steel Inc. Ms. Randall.
I'm here today with Gerald Waterman, representing the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. We wish to reserve 7 minutes of time for rebuttal. This case is a consolidation of two appeals. One is a discretionary appeal concerning the issue of the constitutionality of Ohio Revised Code Section 41-23-01-C1. The second is a certification of conflict between the Fifth District Court of Appeals decision below and the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals concerning whether that statute allows a psychological condition where a contemporaneous physical injury occurs not to the plaintiff but to a third party. With respect to that first issue, the Court of Appeals determined that Mr. Bailey could state a claim for a workers' compensation claim, even though he himself did not suffer a physical injury. While Mr. Bailey's counsel in his argument to this court has given some lip service to supporting that interpretation, that was not raised by Mr. Bailey's counsel in the court below. In fact, that argument was raised for the first time by the court at oral argument. Both of the amicus briefs filed in this case have indicated very clearly that they do not believe that this district court's interpretation was correct, that it was still reason, and made no attempt to justify it. We do not believe that the issue of the interpretation is a significant issue to be raised by the court because it clearly goes against the intention of the legislature in acting that statute. So today we intend to focus on the constitutionality of the statute in question. The first question in dealing with the constitutional analysis obviously is the standard of review to be applied. This court has consistently applied a rational basis test when considering workers' compensation legislation. Mr. Bailey's counsel agrees that the appropriate test is a rational basis test. The amicus brief disagrees with that standard and the other as to the appropriate standard that should be used. However, I think it's clear that in examining all of the cases cited in this brief, the court has always used a rational basis test in workers' compensation matters. And particularly in the Dorsum case, this court specifically stated that the nature of the statute, and in that case, in dealing with 41-23-59B, did not require a heightened or strict scrutiny standard. Therefore, the issue is whether this statute bears a rational basis. The court has already answered that question in affirmative. This court, in Ryan versus Connor, recognized that there is a difference between physical injury and psychological injury. The court specifically said, in that the causation of a physical contact injury usually is more readily discernible than that of a stress-related injury, there is a reasonable basis for making this distinction. The court went on to say that recovery for stress-related injuries should be linked to certain factors that may not be present in physical contact injuries. Therefore, this court has already said that there is a rational basis for making that distinction. The legislature has been consistent with prior case law and with its own enactment. There simply must be physical injury in order to allow a workers' compensation claim. The briefs which have been filed seem to make the argument that because of the language of the Ohio Constitution, the legislature can make no limitation whatsoever for workers' compensation purposes. But the Constitution specifically says that the legislature can set the terms and conditions upon which compensation and benefits shall be paid. That clearly means that if those terms and conditions are not met, then compensation and benefits will not be paid. If the logic set forth in the amicus brief is carried to the conclusion, then the legislature could set no limitation whatsoever. This court has recognized limitations in various areas and examined those from a constitutional standpoint and have indicated that that was permissible.
Are you arguing that it's not defensible because it's a third-party problem? Is that what you're arguing? In other words, the injury happened in this case to another party, and because he was involved in it, he became in this condition. If it happened...
That's part of the issue, okay. Yes.
What if it happened to him? What if he was injured on the job, and this psychiatric condition arose from that injury that he received on the job? Would that be compensable?
A psychological condition that arises as a flow-through from the claimant's physical injury is compensable, yes.
Got his arm cut off on the line, that's compensable. And because of that terrible condition, he develops a condition of the mind that is causing him problems. Are those not only the arm, but the other condition able to be collected on?
That is true. The psychological condition is allowed because it flows from a physical injury.
So all psychological problems are not automatically not compensable.
That is true. Where there is no physical injury, psychological claim is not compensable.
Wasn't there physical injury in this case?
Yes, but the physical injury did not arise to the claimant themselves.
Don't you have to read words into the statute in order to come to your conclusion? States psychiatric condition, except where the conditions have arisen from an injury or occupation disease. I don't see where it says from an injury to a complainant, to the claimant, or occupation disease to the claimant. Where you read those words into the statute?
Even the 5th District Court of Appeals recognized that the intent of the legislature was to require physical injury to the parties who have psychological condition. That was clearly the intent of the statute as recognized by the 5th District Court of Appeals.
No, I think they said physical injury. I don't think they said to the party who, in this claim, I think that some physical injury was needed in order for the claim to be recognized, and it didn't necessarily mean, or I didn't interpret their reasoning, that it wasn't necessarily to the party who's got the condition.
But the statute specifically defines injury.
Well, we have a physical injury in this case.
I understand that, but the statute specifically says that an injury must be received in the course of and arising out of the injured employee's employment.
It does. This condition developed from the injury he caused to a third party.
The problem with the decision of the Court of Appeals is that...
No, but let's stay there. This condition comes out of an injury during the work that he was performing, and it just so happens that the injury he received was to his mind instead of to his body. Now, that's still compensable, is it not?
Without his own personal physical injury, purely mental, purely psychological condition.
Right. Let's make it a little maybe more simple for me. What if he not only injured the person in the collision, but he was physically injured also? Okay. They're both on the job, they both get injured, and he develops not only a physical injury, but a psychological injury in this accident.
Right.
Wouldn't it be compensable?
If he establishes that his psychological condition arose from his physical injury, then it would be compensable.
Right. So I can't understand where we're going here. If the condition is recognized on the circumstances of an injury on the job, why do we have to be so circumspect about it and say, well, wait a minute, you didn't get injured on the job, you only got injured in your mind, so you can't collect? Why do we have to be so strict on that? Why can't we say that injury received on the job, it's also compensable?
This court has already said that psychological conditions are distinct in their causation and proof issues. It's one thing when those conditions arise as a flow-through from a specific physical injury.
But law is...
But to broaden that to any stress-related situation...
We keep changing...
It comes as additional...
Well, we keep changing interpretations and so forth and advancing as we go along. The law advances also. And isn't that what the Court of Appeals did in this instance, that the inevitable came along and they said that we are taking a stand that in this type of condition, this is also should be compensable because it's not fair or not, it wasn't incorporated into the intent of the legislature to have all these injuries on the job compensable. Isn't that why they stepped one step further and said, yes, this is compensable?
But they created a distinction which makes whether you can file a psychological claim dependent upon whether the person who was injured was in the course and scope of their employment. I don't see that has any rationale.
So we're going to say his condition isn't compensable, but if he broke his finger, the finger is compensable, and the psychological problem is also compensable.
Only if he can establish that the psychological condition arose out of the
broken. Well, he has a very bad finger, and the doctor says that because he broke that finger, he can't play the violin anymore at home, and it really causes him problems. That would be compensable if he just broke his finger, right?
That is a possibility.
Okay.
And I must conclude at this time to allow time for
Let me ask you before you do that, and if you want Mr. Waterman to answer, that's fine, but the UATLA brief, the amicus brief, of course, acknowledges our Rambo case and asks us to review it and remodel. Asks us to review it and suggest that there's some circular reasoning in the way it's been interpreted and the way it's written. What's your response to that?
I don't see that there's any reason for this court to backtrack from the interpretation which has been consistently given, and that is that subsection 1 precludes purely psychological claims. I think it's clear, first of all, that without the court would have accomplished nothing by putting this section in if it did not intend to exclude psychological claims. The legislature is presumed to have a purpose for everything it enacts. If you follow Mr. Holmes' reason, there was no reason whatsoever to put this subsection in the legislation. We must give it some meaning. The meaning is clear that it precludes psychological conditions when they do not arise from a physical injury. They're right. I don't believe they're complete. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Waterman, do you wish to argue now or wait for a rebuttal?
Thank you.
Mr. Bryan.
Good morning. Please, the court, counsel, Mr. Chief Justice and Associate Justice. My name is Richard Bryan, and I have the honor of representing Mr. Leonard Bailey in this matter before you today. Excuse me, I'm joined here today by Mr. Philip Holman and Mr. Stuart Jaffe, who have entered appearances as amicus in this case, urging this court to affirm the Fifth District's finding that not only is 41.301C unconstitutional and that it violates equal protection, but also that third party injury can't satisfy the definition of injury.
Counselor, this case arises because at the administrative level, the claim was denied.
That is correct.
You then, or somebody on behalf of your client, filed a 512 appeal. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And of course, the other party in this case is the employer, Republic Engineered Seals. When you filed your 512 appeal, did you question the constitutionality of the statute?
Yes, we did.
Did you serve the Attorney General?
Yes, we did.
Independent of their representing the department?
Yes, we did.
If you go to ordinary court, outside of one of the
homes, get you one of these days. Is that how that's going to rise?
And our ordinary structure system, that first one, is not supposed to be that accommodate you as much as that part.
I believe that you would serve it. This order shows the result of the last need not be a temporary suspension. Two persons moving to court, which is covered for negative.
Could not be any family relationship or not that, or you know, like.
I didn't have to be a total life here. And I think that the argument that was rejected in that case was that it's too difficult to prove psychological injuries. I mean, the court articulated a position in that case that modern psychiatric science has reached a level of that really kind of discrimination.
When you take your case to its extreme, my understanding of your position would be that if you had a company meeting, we had 300 employees in the room, they're demonstrating new chemical baths. Somebody slips and falls in the chemical bath. And your theory that all 300 of those employees would be entitled to recover for whatever measure they receive. Is that correct?
Yes and no.
If they can prove.
I think that all 300 of those people should have the right to make it.
They can prove that they did suffer a mental illness. Watching that person die in the chemical bath.
If they could prove that their psychological injury arose out of witnessing that act, yes. By the same token, if that same chemical that explodes injures all 300 of those people, all 300 of them.
I understand that, but I'm trying to carry out to a lot of conclusions that you're trying to serve here. I'm trying to live with it. I think it can have huge ramifications for the relationship with your act.
And I agree, and I think that's one of the major concerns, and certainly raised by the district for the appellants, that this is going to open up some sort of floodgate of claims. We don't, by any stretch of the imagination, expect this court to find that any and all stress-related cases would be defensible. We all, every day, are subjected to stress. I know I'm calling right now. I don't think they could rise to the claim. We have to look, perhaps, to Ryan versus Connor.
Okay, let's go back to the case that we had. I don't remember the name, but I don't remember the name of the case. But the case involved a woman who was locked in the street, suffered a psychological injury. No physical injury could be locked in the street by the disease, but psychological injury. And we held that if that wasn't covered under the cop, she had a cause of action. Outside. Has there been any legislative change in reaction to that result of that?
And if
so they don't
recover.
Don't you think that Bunker could be distinguished from this case?
Yes, I do. I don't think it should be. I don't think it has to be overruled. I don't think there would be that many cases of logic that would be brought up if we allow recovery in the
court. What about Rambaldo? I didn't find a citation to Rambaldo in your brief. Is that because you don't think it's relevant, or we seem to decide this issue in that case? What changed since 1992?
Very little, unfortunately, and I think that's part of our point. I think Rambaldo is distinguishable. I know that within the body of that decision, the court did indicate that there was very little difference between occupational disease and injury, but the finding holding in that case was that a purely psychological injury did not satisfy the statutory definition of an occupational disease. It was not a constitutionally based decision, or rather a public policy. The importance, I think, of that, as I recall it, was Justice Wright, the protocol, he encouraged the legislature to address this problem. The court acknowledged that purely psychological injuries do arise out of employment.
And that's really where it should be addressed, is it not? Isn't it a rational basis? There's no rational basis for the General Assembly to say people who commit suicide aren't covered and people with idiopathic diseases are not covered and people that have, we may think they should be, but is that not a policy issue for the General Assembly, as we said in Rambaldo? That's their job, or its job, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think that the instances of suicide, intoxication, idiopathic causes are things that do not arise out of employment. In this particular case, we all acknowledge that these conditions arise out of employment. It's our position that those are therefore compensable.
Well, a person has a stressful job, and so they become an alcoholic. That rise out of employment through the book?
No, I don't think so, because I think that, again, we can apply a Ryan versus Hunter test, and we have to talk about the types of instances where we have greater than normal stress occasioned by the average worker, where we have a police officer involved in a fatal shooting, a store partner who's robbed at gunpoint, who perhaps can't maintain a vehicle's possession because all safeguards were put in place by the employer, or somebody like Mr. Bailey, who part of the horrific death of a co-worker. These are the kind of cases we're talking about. Rambaldo, again, the court encouraged the legislature to do something, and that was 8 years ago when they haven't done anything. I think Justice Stratton echoed that in her concurring opinion in Bunker. Let's leave it to the legislature. I don't think these people can wait any longer. I don't think the legislature, they have spoken. They've spoken by passing 4123.01c.
Well, counsel can.
The legislature hasn't spoken doesn't mean that what they have said is unconstitutional, does it? I mean, maybe a lot of people. Obviously, in other states, there is some coverage for this sort of claim, but our legislature decided, at least to date, not to provide that coverage. And so, if it was a public policy issue then, and we urged the General Assembly to do something, recognize it's their responsibility of the law to be changed. What's changed in that policy philosophy of law?
Well, I guess I don't agree.
You have stronger arguments.
With the finding in Rambaldo, I guess my position is that if you accept the fact, or if you accept the case that the legislature does have, in terms of conditions, section 42, section 35, the right to pass such a law to define injury, I think they have to do so without offending other portions of the Constitution, which in this case is clause. If you do think that they have the right to make such a definition, I don't think they can do so in such a way as to create this class of individuals.
If you could address the constitutional issue, I thought that our biggest hurdle here is the Equal Protection Clause and whether or not this definition violates the Equal Protection Clause. Assuming rational basis review, could you address that?
Yes, and we, in the purpose of our brief, acknowledge that that's in rational basis. We certainly appreciate the efforts of the police. And I think a lot was said in the reply brief about what standard that we wish to discuss, but we believe it is a rational basis test. And I think that there's a long line of cases out of this court that apply the rational basis test and found that certain statutes were unconstitutional, going all the way back to 1975 in Kinney. and any administrative ease to not form a rational basis for the statute which set up jurisdictional requirements to establish a death plan.
Well, acknowledging, counsel, that any plausible basis should put our inquiry at an end, that a court's inquiry ends where we determine that there is any plausible basis for determining that these psychological injuries without any kind of physical injury are not compensable. If there's any plausible reason for that categorization or classification, we should stop.
Is there such a...
Yeah, and the argued plausible reason is a standard with regard to, I guess your argument is preservation of the fund isn't a plausible reason.
I think this court has said that.
Okay.
In NITRE.
Where?
In NITRE.
That's not a... Okay.
I think specifically said that preservation of funds is not a rational basis, and I think the court went even further after NITRE in Patterson. And even in stronger language, as Patterson said, that preservation of the state insurance fund, specifically identifying that fund, is not a rational basis for denying compensation in that case to relief workers, or distinguishing between relief workers and workers in general. And I think in that case, in the Patterson case, the court not only rejected administrative ease, conservation of benefits, but also went through and looked at the other types of things that we look for to find a rational basis. I think those things that we commonly refer to as the police powers of the state, and looked at it. There was no rational basis for it.
Well, rational basis doesn't mean that you have to tie that, you know, that the reason the General Assembly had in mind makes that actually ties to, you know, the numbers, for instance, but it doesn't mean that. It means that we can't void legislation that we can think of any good reason. And if I think you're suggesting that case took a different approach and said there's no nexus between preservation of the fund and the classification.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's our argument.
Counselor, I'd like to get back to what the issue in this case is. The issue is a certified question. Need we find anything constitutional or unconstitutional to answer the certified question?
The certified question goes to the third-party issue, Your Honor. You're absolutely correct.
I understand. It's whether a psychiatric condition arising from compensable injury or disease suffered by a third party is compensable under C1. Now, how does that impact, other than what the Court of Appeals said with regard to, in fact, they found the statute constitutional, the Court of Appeals did. But in any event, do we need to talk about the constitutionality of C1 to answer the certified question?
To answer the certified question, arguably yes, because I think what has happened, we, as Ms. Randall pointed out, absolutely correctly, did not raise that issue. It came up for the first time in the oral argument with the district. And I think what we're seeing in that is, as we saw in cases such as that resulted in the village, that we have this somewhat torturous finding to avoid finding that the statute is unconstitutional.
Yeah, I understand all that, but we don't decide constitutional issues unless there's no other way out, to put it in some of our language. The fact is, we're not supposed to do that. Does that question require us to find the statute unconstitutional?
To
answer it?
The third party, no.
Okay, and that's what's been certified to us for our decision, hasn't it?
Well, there's also a discretionary appeal because of page 8 of the opinion. The court says, this is the Fifth District, we find the denial of compensation of employees who suffer psychiatric conditions which do not arise from a compensable injury inherently unfair, contrary to the purposes of compensating workers under Section 35, Article 2, and went on to sustain our objections, and our only objections were the statute is unconstitutional. So I think we're here on the court.
Well, and we the Court of Appeals, however, said that it is our duty to find the, I have the language here, because this court finds C1 is susceptible of a constitutional construction, we're required to give the statute such a construction in order to preserve its validity. Didn't they preserve the validity of C1?
in the case before them, yes, but it hasn't.
In the case that's before us?
Correct.
Sure, they did.
Also on the issue, though, of the fact that they didn't find that it was unconstitutional in general, but as applied, Mr. Bailey.
That seems to be advisory, doesn't it? Because they did it, Justice Douglas says. The judgment says we preserve the constitutionality statute by saying that. This injured worker, or other injured worker, is in fact the injured worker in the statute to contemplate. So it seems to me that for appeals, it's a little difficult to follow because you say they ruled on the one assignment of error, but then their judgment is based upon preserving the constitutionality of the statute.
I don't think that changes the fact that we have longer, or we can bring in negligence action, we have failure, but there was a third party injury. We get to the sore issue of whether or not this
is it fair to say you want to throw out C1 for all psychological psychiatric injuries? It doesn't just pertain to your case, then. You just want C1 gone.
We think C1 is unconstitutional, yes, Governor.
All right, so the policeman, I remember writing that it seems to me, and I was going to ask Mr. Waterman when he gets up, and I suppose he's anticipated this, but isn't it strange, and I don't know why you don't argue this, but isn't it strange that in the 21st century we accept that a broken mind is in fact an injury to the body, don't we?
I think this court has.
All right. If that's the case, isn't it also interesting that we compensate for a broken leg but not a broken mind? Now, why would that not be unequal treatment between injured claimants?
I think that's exactly
what we're claiming. Well, I don't get that from the brief, but in any event, that's you want it gone altogether, so that every psychological injury in every workplace incident is going to be compensable.
We want those individuals to have the right to bring a claim.
Thank you, Brian. Mr. Waterman, you have about 3 minutes.
Other than because the General Assembly said so, Mr. Waterman, why do we not compensate for broken minds when we do for broken legs? For instance, the police officer in, I think it was Norwood, as I remember. The city comes in and admits that this man was on 24-hour duty, on drug detail, being shot at and all that, that his mind snapped because of his job, but we don't compensate for that. Why is that equal protection of injuries claimants?
Your Honor, I don't think anyone that's before this court in this case would deny Mr. Bailey in this particular case may have developed a psychiatric condition as a result of a horrific accident that occurred. But we have to keep in mind, Your Honor, that this is a function of the General Assembly. The workers' compensation statutes set forth the wishes of the people of Ohio as determined by the General Assembly. I also don't think that anyone here would really dispute the fact that from a historical perspective, the psychological injury claim alone is not compensable under the Ohio workers' compensation laws. We can go back to the beginning of the century. Whether it be the enactment of the Constitution or the statutes that follow, physical injury was not something, or psychiatric claims alone were not something that were looked upon with favor. And as been recognized by Justice Stratton, this court has made a change as far as tort law is concerned. In the Schultz case, when they, shall we say, opened the door to having the emotional claim without physical injury compensable. The same thing could happen in this case. However, that is a function of the General Assembly.
And the important thing, isn't it, Mr. Waterman, the important thing is that the law doesn't require, equal protection doesn't require everyone being treated equally. It simply requires that where we make some kind of classification, that classification be based on any conceivable, rational basis.
Yes. And here we have the statute 4123.01c that states injury includes any injury whether caused by external accidental means, accidental character and result, received in the course of and arising out of the injured employee's employment. Injury does not include psychiatric conditions.
Counsel,
except for if you're reading the language to us, Justice Cook has just pointed out that any conceivable rational basis for unequal treatment would be exceptions. So what is the conceivable rational basis for unequal treatment? I mean, you've read us the statute, it says it's clearly unequal.
Yet again,
what's the rational basis?
Well, looking at it from a historical perspective and also from the standpoint of the desire of the General Assembly is to say that all workers' compensation claims, all compensable Ohio workers' compensation claims must have a foundation with a physical injury. Now, from that, you then can have a psychiatric claim arise. As has been explained in answering questions, that there can be a physical injury with subsequently developing psychiatric condition. But the desire of the General Assembly very possibly could be, and I think it would be a very rational basis then to state that there must be physical injury to have a compensable workers' compensation claim. Now, if the General Assembly desires to say, no, we no longer want that, times have changed, then there must be a statutory amendment. But it would be the function of the General Assembly to do that.
I still didn't hear you answer the question, which, what is the rational basis for distinguishing between a mental injury and a physical injury, treating these two groups of people differently?
Well, Your Honor, as I said, it's a matter of the General Assembly stating.
Well, Counsel, you tell me what the words say. I'm asking you, what's the rational basis for the distinction? I understand there's a distinction.
If we look and we I think we can all recognize and accept the fact that from public perception, maybe psychiatric claims are not looked upon with favor. In fact, this court has acknowledged some other cases, Supreme Court of the United States case about psychiatric and psychological disciplines are often imprecise. And to use that as the basis for a workers' compensation claim would be troubling or concerning to the General Assembly. The basis, looking from the historical standpoint,
let me give you something that occurs to me. Someone who's worked in the plant for 20, 30 years in my town, watched bearings roll down the line 8 hours a day all of their life, and at some point they go nuts. It's crazy now because I'm just watching bearings go down the line for too long. That's hard to sort out.
Psychiatric evaluations that indicate many factors in an individual's life that come upon to play the ultimate manifestation of the psychiatric diagnosis. To say that there's one specific incident, whether it be because I saw something horrific happen at work or because I've been working at this.
So do you think that's the reason? I'm trying to get you back to what's the rational basis. Is the rational basis because it's on mental injury, it's hard to discern an event that triggers that?
In quoting from this court's decision in Kroger Company versus Industrial Commission, 80 Ohio State 3rd, 483, where they indicated the Washington Supreme Court had stated, psychological and psychiatry are imprecise disciplines. Unlike biological sciences, their methods of investigation are primarily subjective, and most of their findings are not based on physically observable evidence. The court then went on to quote from a United States Supreme Court case where they said that that court made a similar conclusion. Psychiatric diagnosis, in contrast, is to a large extent based on medical impressions drawn from subjective analysis and filtered through the experience of the diagnostician. It's not the same as a physical injury claim.
So I'm asking, is that your answer? Do you believe the rational basis is that the mental injury is hard to discern the cause? And consequently, they decided to just take them all off the table because of difficulty of discerning, sorting out causation as to whether or not it's work-related or not.
I think that could play into the...
Is that your answer as to the rational basis?
So that, and I would venture to say, the public perception that historically has gone along with psychiatric claims. But again, if there is to be a change, that should be done for the general assembly. And we also must recognize, of course, that there is a strong presumption of the constitutionality of the statute. We have several situations involving this injury, as was brought up by Justice Sweeney, the situation if there is a physical injury to another individual.
I don't mean that you're papering over the basic nut here, and that is rational basis. You've got strong presumptions, you've got all this going for you, but you do need to lay on the table a rational basis.
Yeah, and I believe I've set forth, Your Honor.
Your definition of rational basis, which is drawn from not just your own head, but from treatises and cases, is, would seem to be supported by the states that have carved out a sort of midfield on this, where if the mental condition is a result of some sort of tragic event, some instantaneous event, that there is coverage for mental anguish or mental condition, and that would seem to support. Seems to me, I'm asking a question. Does that support your suggestion that the rational basis, at least the story, really has been difficulty between identifying a broken bone as a result of a piece of equipment falling on someone in a shop versus this more ethereal sort of attempt to decide what really has caused someone's mental illness? Does that make any sense?
Yes, Your Honor, these are all elements that could come into the picture to establish the basis for having such a holding. I was not alone in this doctrine of not having the compensability of the psychiatric-only claim.
How many states have held that it's compensable?
Your Honor, I believe it is in the majority. I do not have specific figures. In Larson, which is, I'm sure the court is aware, is
so the majority of the states don't feel that the rational basis is reasonable to their people in their states.
And I believe, Your Honor, that the states that have made the changes to accepting it have done so via legislation.
Yeah, they've not been. The Supreme Courts have not said
it's,
the legislation.
It's not a matter of constitutionality being an issue.
Thank you.
And, Your Honor, also to address the concern that you had about the
I think your time is up. Your red light is on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. We would ask that the decision of the court below be reversed and that the statute be upheld in its constitution.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.